Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 71 of Boston's Best, brought to you by Condon Productions. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Chip Jari. Chip is the co-founder with Sean Rich of Bay State Brewing Company located in Worcester. They partnered up with their 45 years of combined beer and brewing knowledge to open Bay State Brewing in 2012. They have everything from a 10% double IPA called Becky to a line of incredible 5% seltzers and everything in between. Chip shares with us that they opened their Bay State taproom on February 29th last year. It was also the 150th anniversary for the city of Worcester. Everyone was having a great time, and he even recruited friends of his to work as staff because they were so busy. Then, 16 days later, they had to shut it down while the world figured out what was going on with COVID. Chip uses the expression that they wore out the sole of their left shoes because they had to pivot so much last year. In this episode, we discuss how they go about naming their beers and how they come up with the designs on the cans as well. Chip lets us in on the moment he knew they were on their way to success when he got a call from his daughter one day. And be sure to listen to the end as Chip shares the advice he'd give to anyone looking to start their own business, what he would tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoy this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week we have Chip Jari. Chip is the co-founder of Bay State Brewing Company with Sean Rich. How you doing, Chip?
Good, Mark. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on Boston's Best. I feel like I'm a little biased towards breweries. I think you might be like the 8th, 9th, or maybe 10th brewery I've had on here. I think it's just a cool industry. I've kind of got into the craft beer myself. So I think it's just personally, it's a lot of fun to chat about. And I think people have just enjoyed all the new breweries that have popped up kind of all over the state in the last decade or so.
Well, of all the bad habits you could have, that's not a bad one.
That's fair. I like that. So before we get into the company itself, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you from Massachusetts? Like, did you grow up around here?
I've been here 40 years, so that's as good as being native as possible. I'm originally from Kansas. My father worked for Boeing. So when I was little, we moved around a lot, ended up going up outside of Philadelphia in Delaware. And after I graduated school, I moved up here. I met my wife and I've been here ever since.
Nice. So when you graduated school, were you immediately in the brewing industry or did you do something else beforehand?
Oh, no, entirely different. I wanted to fly jets for the Navy out of college and I'm colorblind. So I got disqualified, kind of limped along. I worked in sales, primarily in radio for about 13 years. Progressed from there. My love of aviation progressed into working for a company called PlaneSense out of New Hampshire, where we sell fractional shares of aircraft. And I've been doing that ever since. Yeah. And the beer was always an avocation. One thing led to the next. I'm sure we'll get into the whole story in a minute, but just a lifelong of learning and a love for the product itself has led us to where we are at this point in time.
Yeah. So let's get into the journey a little bit. Like, were you home brewing? Like, did you have other jobs at breweries? Like, how did you get into it in the first place?
Like a lot of people, I started as a home brewer. Oh, good Lord. We're talking back in 89.
Okay.
I dabbled a little bit in college with it. My grandfather, he had 7 kids, and during the Depression, he did anything he could to make money. And one of them was selling whiskey to people who'd come by.
Nice.
And the other, he made a lot of beer, and I always remembered that, and kind of stuck with me as something that was really cool. And I mean, that was back before there was any craft brewing or right. anything, and I mean, it was real basic homebrew. I actually saw one of my uncle came up with a recipe one time and I said, you guys drank that? That sounds disgusting. It was basically a can of malt, a couple bags of sugar and some, I think it was baker's yeast. And I was like, I can't imagine how disgusting that was. But I guess in a pinch, you do what you got to do.
Did you try that one in particular?
I never tried it. I looked at the recipe. I said, I'm not even going to bother. That'll end up down the drain. So it didn't matter. But no, he used to do it old school. He used to do it in these big ceramic crocks. And open fermentation, used to bottle everything by hand. And it was just kind of a romantic notion more than anything else.
Yeah. So when did you open Bay State Brewing Company? What year did you guys officially open?
we officially licensed and opened in 2012.
Okay.
Sean and I met about 5 years prior to that, met in a hockey locker room of all places. Both of us still play hockey. I'd make a lot of beer and I can't drink it all. So every week I'd bring a keg or two in and share it with whoever was playing that night. Usually there were three games. So there's plenty of guys to drink beer.
No way.
And one of the guys on my team introduced me to Sean. At that time, Sean was working as an importer for Spaten out of Munich.
Okay.
And that was always one of my favorite beers. And so we naturally just got along because we had something in common to talk about. And at that time, Sean was also with several other guys running a beer show called the Boston Beer Summit. It ran for years out of the Armory, down at the Park Plaza Armory.
Yep.
Great show. And so one night we're yakking over a beer and he said, "You should bring this to the show and try it. You're a really good brewer." And I said, "Come on, I make this at home. I'm not going to embarrass myself. There's professional brewers here. I think I'm well learned, but I'm not degreed." So I said, I'm going to do this. And so we went back and forth a couple times and finally I agreed to do it. I said, "But I'm not going to say it's my beer. I'm going to say I'm a consultant and we're demoing a beer for somebody. We want to get feedback." So he agreed. I had a little tiny little jockey box with two beers in it. And we did this for 4 or 5 shows and people kept coming over and go, "Come on, tell us who this brewery is. This beer is really good." And we got fantastic feedback out of the whole thing. So Sean and myself at that time kind of looked at each other and said, "Well, you know, maybe we got some chops. Let's see what happens." So we pulled our money and we started brewing. We initially started with the same model that Sam Adams did with contracting out of the box.
Okay.
So I would take recipes that I'd spent all this time developing and then we'd scale them up. And we went out in Western Mass and had them brew for us there and had some good success out of the box. Some guys may recognize the old brewery. It was Paper City, which was in Holyoke.
Okay.
They were probably one of the founders of contract brewing in Central and Western Mass. Initially, it went really, really well. And then I found out that they were not as anal retentive about cleanliness as I am. They might have had some Brett or something going in one of their bottling line hoses. And it almost ruined our business. We had one beer in particular called Sieben, which is German for 7. And that beer, we had exploding bottles, we had gushers, and we had to we pulled roughly 7 pallets out of the market. We had to, for our own reputation.
Of course.
So that hurt us. And then we kind of doubled down and started to work with Brewmasters Brewing Services out in Williamsburg. And we knew Dennis and Mike from way back anyway, and they seemed to really have their act together.
Yeah.
And it took a few years really to build our reputation back. It was not good, but we doubled down. We focused again on the product. We expanded the product line. And then, in, I would say 2016, 17, we started looking for a tap room because I think the one thing you need, the market's very crowded, but again, so is the wine market. I mean, how you go into a liquor store, how many bottles of wine or how many winers do you see? It's right. Endless. So not to be dissuaded by how busy the marketplace was. We just needed a face and a place for people to come and sample and get a better feel for who we were.
Yeah.
And after years of looking, we found a place in the Worcester Ice Center, like the hockey irony there.
Yeah, right.
we're able to come to terms with the owner of the facility. And it took us about a year to do tear down and completion, get the equipment in there and then get up and running. Okay. And that's proven to have been our savior. Even through COVID, we were open. The tap room was open all of 16 days. We opened on the 29th of February.
Oh.
We tried to make a big deal. It was on the 150th anniversary of the city of Worcester. It's 29th. We're all psyched. We were hammered. I mean, I had neighbors waiting tables. It was that busy. And then COVID came. And on the 15th of March, city came in and shut everything down. Thank God we had a lot of very loyal customers and friends and family who they'd support us with takeout beer. Everything we had in the tanks, we canned.
Yeah.
So we could do takeout. We did takeout food and just kind of limped along until July. And it was enough to pay. We had a manager and a chef. So John and I didn't take a penny. We paid these two guys and kept them on. Once they started doing outdoor dining, we were able to come about and really start to catch our chops. We're still, I mean, I think we're a good year to get out of this at this point. But we're certainly out of the woods at this, you know. For the time being.
Yeah. Oh my, 16 days. That's crazy. I've had a few people on here. They're open like 2 or 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, but 16 days. That's wild timing. That's crazy. Fortunately, good thing. It sounds like you have a good local community base. And then when you were able to open up, did you I'm trying to picture the outdoor space. Did you already have some of that outdoor space? Were you able to utilize it? So, you know, when they open up, people could go outside?
No. Yes and no. we had a sidewalk area that was considered to be licensed as part of our facility. And it was in the liquor license. Our landlord agreed to let us. The whole idea was put umbrellas out in the summer. Yeah. You know, limited use. It's an expression I've used since we've started. Both of us have worn out our left sneaker completely on the bottom sole. Just from pivoting. Every day you learn to pivot. I don't care what you wrote for a business plan. Forget it, because everything just changed around you. But that said, through some really good friends, we put together a whole bunch of these garden box planters and made a perimeter out of it. Sean had a trailer full of Oktoberfest tables and benches that he got from Munich. And we put those out. And instantly we had an outdoor beer garden.
Yeah.
And thank God it was already licensed. Everything was done. So all we had to do was just do it. And within a week of the announcement of outdoor dining, we were up and running.
Wow.
And it was, and the weather cooperated. Everything worked really, really well.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at July's weather this year, it would have, again, that would have killed us. July rained out. But last year, it was beautiful. You know, yeah. It was sunny and warm every day.
Yeah.
So that was very helpful.
I think it rained like the first 3 weeks of July this year. It's awful. Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Obviously, though, you know, that outdoor, I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, I imagine it didn't produce the amount, you know, generate as much income as it would have outside of that, right?
No.
Yeah.
But, you know, something's better than nothing.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. So you had mentioned, actually, one question I have. So did you already have a canning line? You already had a canning line set up. So when you guys started canning when COVID hit?
We initially went with a mobile canner, since bought a small little canner for upstairs. We do limited runs out of that.
Yeah.
It really depends on where we are. If there's something that I want to put in a short run, cans will do. Otherwise, yeah. I'd rather serve it over the tap.
Yeah.
Just because we can interact more with customers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I didn't even tell you how I came, my first time there. It was probably a couple months ago at this point. A buddy of mine, he lives, I forget what town. He's out in Western Mass. I live in Framingham, and we were trying to find a spot that was halfway. And you were exactly 30 minutes from each of us. I had no idea what to expect when I pulled up. The building is gorgeous. The building, it's huge. You got a big sign. The inside is wicked nice. You guys did a really good job putting that together. Because I haven't been to Worcester in years. So that was my first time there this year. It was fantastic. I had the Sunshine, which I loved, and then I think I had the Kelly. Is that right? Kelly is the name of it, right?
Yep. Kelly, as in Kelly Square.
Yep. Kelly Square. Right. Yeah. 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 I'm a big like juicy IPA type of guy. Sunshine. I love Sunshine. I went right. My eyes just like drew towards that like immediately. do you have a favorite like IPA, stouts, porters, anything like that, or just any of the above?
I would say, it's going to show my heritage and beginnings, but I love a good big German lager. Time Traveler has been on our plate since day one. That's a Maybach. Sieben, which we will bring back. We've brought in different iterations. That's a Märzen. We have Off the Rails, which we brewed for the Railers Hockey Club.
Yep.
And that's a Vienna lager. We've got a Doppelbock that's fermenting right now. I would say that whole genre of just big malt beers. That's my wheelhouse. Number two is a very juicy IPA.
Yeah.
Becky's an interesting anomaly. The inspiration for that beer was actually Great Divide's Hercules, which I had in Virginia of all places. I just happened to be at the dinner one night and I tasted this beer and I said, this is fantastic. What I didn't realize at that time is it was oxidized.
Oh.
So the flavors were off. And I didn't realize it was oxidized until back in 2017. I was in Denver. And I was waiting for my wife's flight to get in. So I went downtown and at 11 o'clock they opened. I was the first guy there. I was waiting for them to open the door and I walk in. I said, I want Hercules right away. And I tasted it. I was like, this is nothing like what I had before. And the differential though, the one that I originally had outside of being slightly oxidized, which put some residual sweetness in it outside of the cardboard and all the other flaws, the positive sides of it, there's a little bit of residual sweetness and the hop load tended to be more of a mix, like an East Coast, West Coast mix. So it was some bright citrusy stuff, not overly bitter, a little bit easier drinking. And that's what our Becky is. It's 10% and it so was the Hercules. That's where the model came from.
Yeah.
But that beer drinks like a 5% beer, and you got to watch yourself with it. And we caution people, you can only get a 1 liter mug out of that, or a half liter, what am I talking about? We don't sell the big mugs with that, or the Kelly, because that's 9.2. Just caution people on that. And then we have another one called OK Karen, which is really orangey. We use some Scandinavian yeast in that, which has a very strong orange overtone. And that beer, we decided just to make it an imperial, and that's weighing in at 13%. And again, that drinks like a 6% beer.
Wow.
So we don't even serve it at the tap room. You just have to buy it and go home with it.
That's 13%. I did not have that one. Next time I'm by, I'll have to grab it and bring it home with me. Drinks like a 6, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
The trick is a balance, because what you don't want is you don't want to be able to taste the alcohol. You don't want it hot either on the palate, because it, in my opinion, makes it not really a drinkable beer.
Yeah.
So really strive for that balance in all of those. I don't know where the market's trending. Every time I read anything in the trades, it's, everybody's going to low alcohol, no alcohol beer. I don't really see it. But I do know for a sessionable beer, particularly in the tap room, I like having some stuff that's in the 4.5 to 6.5 range. That's just it's more consumer friendly.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, you want to have a little bit for everybody, right? Like my wife, a couple of years ago, I started getting her into the brewery scene and she loves it, but you know, she's not going to have the 9.2 Kelly Square. Like she likes like the fives, like she can have some of the sixes. Ironically enough, she really enjoys stouts, which surprised me. But the double or triple IPAs just hasn't really appealed to her. But yeah, so like having that 4 to 6 range, you know, you can appeal to the broader scope of everybody, you know, a lot of palates out there.
Well, bring her in. We have an oatmeal stout that's going to come on in another week and a half.
Okay.
And it's light. It's only 4.5, but very sweet, very tasty, very, very full beer.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely have to bring her in. At the time of this recording, my wife is due with our first child in 10 days, but so 11 days from now, roughly, she will be good to go, and we'll have to we'll bring the baby by for maybe a little Saturday afternoon. She'll have the oatmeal stout.
You didn't make the promise to your wife. I did you?
What was that?
You know, she's pregnant with our first child. I said, listen, out of sympathy, since you can't drink, I won't drink either. That lasted about 4 days. She didn't drink in pregnancy, but I did.
No, I did not make that deal with her. I know a friend of mine that did with his wife, and I was like, I don't think so. I'm not going to do that. So I've enjoyed it, not in her face, but I've enjoyed, you know. So yeah, we'll definitely have to come by. She'll probably like that oatmeal stuff. Question I have is, so you have the O'Karen, you have the Felicia, which is a porter, I believe. You've mentioned the Becky. A lot of female names. Is there a trend, or is that just, you know, the women in your lives? Like, how do you, I'm always curious how people come up with names.
All right. Well, first of clarification, Felicia is one of our IPAs that's infused with cold brew coffee.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking coffee. Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But it's light. You look at it in the color, you're like, this doesn't look like it has. Because anytime people put coffee in beer, it's always dark or black.
Yeah.
And this one's light, but regardless, I digress. Now, the names came, Becky was first, and I'll tell you part of the story. Maybe I'll tell you the whole story, where that name came from. After Becky came Sinshine, which was kind of an iteration. There really was no female name for Sinshine. Then came Felicia. We had Ruby, which was a beet-infused IPA. Karen and Kelly. Kelly's just happened to be, we put girls on the label. My wife actually is the one who picked out some of that old artwork that came about. We tried with all the copyright laws. We found some really cool, you know, anything from nose art from World War II through the 50s and 60s. There's some really cool stuff out there. But a lot of those artists are dead. And you can't find the families. You can't find the copyrights. Or like, well, morally, I can't take this guy's work and use it. So we go out to area artists and say, here's what I'm looking for. And they'd kind of recreate it. And we'd throw little things in, like, can you put tattoos of the other girls on there? Can you do this? Can you do that? So my wife actually picked all those out, and that acted as the framework for it. And her point has always been, we always pick strong women. She's an advocate of women should be elevated to the same position of men from pay to everything else. So let's put strong women on, not objectified women.
Right.
And that's funny. Every time we talk to an artist, we're like, stop tarting it up. We don't want to tart it up. Bring it back down.
Yeah.
make her pretty, but don't objectify her.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. So when you guys opened base day, you had mentioned, you know, the issue you had with the cleanliness, and, you know, where it was initially being made. So obviously it comes with its own challenges. What are some of the early successes that you guys celebrated early on where you knew that you had a pretty solid business going forward?
I would say the best success where we really knew we were turning the corner was with our Becky Double IPA.
Yeah.
The name helped, but the beer is what carried it through. And
yeah,
really spread by word of mouth and social media. Our customers were always our best advocates. Vermont picked that up, and it always surprises me, as provincial as Vermont is with beer, we sell a ton of that up there.
Really?
And it's just, my daughter sent me a picture. She's driving around up by Cabot Creamery one day, pulls into a gas station. There's six beers in the cooler, and Becky's one of them. And I was like, hey, send me a picture. I don't believe it.
No.
So like a Bud, Miller, Lawson's, a couple of other different things in there. And there was Becky. I was like, no way.
Wow.
So when that happened, that was a turning the corner for me. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, you knew you were onto something there. That's cool. How many beers do you typically have on tap on any given day, roughly?
We always have 12 on tap.
Okay.
And then that's the way our system's set up. So it's rotating constantly. A lot of, if it's not on tap, it's in a can in the cooler. So we have roughly, with the other two coming on, we have 21 different beers so far. And then we have six different seltzers. We started that last year as well. Sean and I were talking. He said that, you know, we really need to put a seltzer into the market. It's trending, and particularly in a tap room. A lot of people come in and say, I don't drink beer. I don't like beer. And the brewer's license, I can't make wine.
Yeah.
With cider, but I can make seltzer. And I said, all right, here's a deal. I'll make it, but I'm not going to serve anything I won't drink.
There you go.
And I was just chuckling, thinking, because I can't stand the seltzers that are out there. They all taste fake.
Yeah.
You know, the saccharine, fake fruit flavors.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, there's no way this is ever going to happen. Stumbled on really the holy grail of bringing a product that when you drink our seltzer, it just tastes like an unfiltered carbonated water is what it tastes like. There's nothing to it.
Oh, wow.
It's clean, doesn't have any of this weird aftertaste to it.
Yeah.
And then we thought, all right, well, we're going to put flavor back in, and anything that's in the market that's an artificial flavor is not good. That's the best way I can put it.
I
think you drink a beverage and you burp it back up and you taste it for hours afterwards, that's a mark of something I don't want to put in my mouth. And I started to do some more research and thinking. We have a blood orange lager and we have a watermelon lager. And in both of those, I use real fruit for the flavorings. So I started to put two and two together, and we started to put the real fruit into the seltzer. It added another 5 or 6 calories. We're trying to hit the 100 calorie mark.
Yeah.
We ended up at 105, but the taste difference is fantastic.
And
you can drink this stuff all day. So we have a mandarin orange, we have a lemon lime, a raspberry lemonade, strawberry lemonade, excuse me, pineapple, and I'm forgetting one. We also have a gin and tonic, of all things.
No way.
So we started fooling around with quinine and gin botanicals,
yeah,
and put that in there. And it's surprising. It's just like drinking a gin and tonic. And the interesting thing about that one in particular is that in the research I did, if you go into any bar and you order a gin and tonic, typically the alcohol content's anywhere between 3% on up to 10% if somebody's giving you a stiff pour. And all our seltzers are 5%. So I figured it was right in the wheelhouse as far as drinkability and the flavor right there. The only thing I would do a little bit better, and I tell people when you drink our gin and tonic seltzer, put a lime in it or a lemon in it as you deem appropriate, and it really brings it around.
Oh, nice. Nah, I didn't know that. It's smart to get a share of that market, though, because seltzers, like Sean said, seltzers are just trending right now. There's, I don't know what it is about them. I'm not really into it, but they hit home with a lot of people for whatever reason. So smart of you to get some share of that. How different is that process? And like, did you like, was it just a little tweak? Like, you've never made seltzer before, right? Like, how different is the process from brewing a batch of, you know, Becky to like a seltzer?
Oh, it's a piece of cake.
If
I could just make all seltzer, it would be easy. It's basically dextrose. You have a choice of GMO or non-GMO modified dextrose. And then the yeast we use, purified water, and all you're doing is heating it, cooling it, add the yeast, let it ferment, clean it up, carbonate it, add your fruit. That's it.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
It's a 5 or 6 day turnaround. If everything was that easy.
Not bad. Not bad. So do you and Sean have certain parts of the business that you each run? Like you only focus on this and he only focused on that. You guys kind of do a little bit of everything together.
A little bit of everything together. I would say he does the lion's share of a lot of the day to day in the tap room. He's very good at vision.
Yeah.
He just sees a lot of trends. He's been in the industry a long time and he's very good at making a suggestion, and he'll make a suggestion and I'll run with it. So I think we make a really good team that way. He's the one who actually found the location for the tap room. He just happened to be at that rink quite a bit with his son playing hockey. At first I thought, who would ever put a brewery in a tap in an ice rink? That's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And it works. It's unique enough, but a lot of times it's just shared activity. On brew days, he's there with me, and we split up a lot of the management inside the tap room itself. But a lot of the day to day stuff falls in his lap.
Yeah. So what do you two see for the future of Bay State Brewing Company? You're still young, right? So like, what do you see for the future? You think you'll stay in that same location? It's a pretty good size location. I guess, what do you guys see?
That location will stay. I don't see any reason for it to change. I'd like to get completely out of COVID and understand where we're going.
Yeah, that's fair.
But we may open up another one down the road. On the other hand, I like the uniqueness of it. We want to keep it as it is.
Yeah.
Rather than, people come up to us all the time. Are you going to franchise this? Are you going to do this all over the place? Let's get this done right first.
Yeah.
And then we'll look to other ideas.
Yeah.
The beauty of it, though, is it does act as an incubator, as I said, for our retail product. And it's great for me to somebody will come in and I'll just ask them what they're drinking and why'd you pick that and what do you think of it? And that direct feedback is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it kind of tells me, A, you need to tweak this, or B, maybe you ought to run with this product.
Yeah.
Or maybe C, you ought to get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that happens every once in a while. I can tell you the two I had that was delicious. Outside, I guess that's what you see for the future of it. Do you ever picture yourself? I'm always curious about this question with business owners. Do you ever picture yourself like 100% sailing off and retiring? Do you think you'll always have your foot in the door in some capacity, whether it's Bay State or something else?
The quick answer is, yeah, I always see myself there. I always thought the best retirement job in the world would be walking in your mid-70s, early 80s, and still working.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 hours a day, and you just come up and, what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing? Give me a beer and go home. I think retirement's probably the worst thing for anybody, not only your mental health, but your physical health. You need a reason to get up every day and do something.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I'd be bored out of my mind. Like, I've made this joke a couple of times. My wife and I went to Hawaii on our anniversary a couple of years ago. Don't get me wrong. It's gorgeous. The mountains, the ocean, everything's amazing out there. But, I'm just a white Irish guy sitting outside in the sun for 8 straight hours. I'm just going to get a sunburn all day. And it kind of gets old. Like I need to do something instead of just sitting outside with nothing to do. So I feel the same way. I feel like I do something in maybe just a smaller capacity, but I feel like I'm always going to do something just to keep myself busy. Outside of the brewery, what do you enjoy doing? What are some of the hobbies that you do?
Well, like I said, we still play hockey.
Yep.
Skated last night. We're gonna skate again tonight.
Nice.
That's for me, it's not exercise. It's fun.
Yeah.
Of course, if you ask anybody I play with, I just stand around and act like a cone anyway, but that's I still dabble with flying every now and then. Lately, I've just been consumed with the business, but when I get a little bit more time, I'll go back and start fly fishing again. And it's a matter of finding the time.
No, that's fair. So what do you fly?
The plane I used to sell is a Pilatus, which is a Swiss-built turboprop. Mostly what I've flown, most of my hours are like in Arrows and Cherokees, that stuff, small four-seaters,
yeah,
little thing.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
People always joke, I'm the only guy they know with a commercial pilot's license and never made a dime flying a plane.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. That's pretty cool to know how to fly a plane. I have no idea. So, Chip, so last three questions I've asked every guest on Boston's Best. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. What is one piece of advice you would give to someone looking to start their own business?
Plan.
Yeah.
Plan a lot. Run your numbers. And then be prepared to throw it all away and think your way out of a box, because it's going to happen. Yeah. I don't care how much you plan, things are going to change on you and you've got to be able to adapt.
Yeah. Yeah. In 16 days, maybe. So if you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell him?
Have more confidence in yourself.
And last question, everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how do you define success?
Success to me is just having really good friends and supportive friends. And I don't think I even realized this until we opened that tap room. Just the amount of people who came out to support us, you know, even casual acquaintances. And to me, that makes me a rich man.
Awesome. Awesome. Chip, thank you very much for coming on Boston's Best. I appreciate the time and promoting yourself, Sean, and Bay State Brewing Company.
All right. Well, give me a call one day. Bring your wife down and we'll take her through all the beers.
Sounds good to me, man. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best Podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.